This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, trying to figure out human behavior. And we'll get a preview of the Bengals' upcoming season, which starts on Sunday. But first, Wild About Wildflowers. That's the title of a new exhibit from the Lloyd Library and Museum, the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, and the Wildflower Preservation Society to explore the world of Ohio's native plants. The exhibit's going to feature wildflower and native plant photography, live specimens, art, prints, artifacts, and manuscripts. And joining us for a preview are Cincinnati Wildflower Preservation Society President Christine Hadley, Lloyd Library and Museum Executive Director Patricia Van Skaik, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Horticulture Brian Jorg, who guides expeditions to locations in the United States and around the world and is also an avid outdoor and travel photographer. In fact, a number of his photos are part of the exhibit. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Christine, Brian, and Patricia, thank you all for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we probably should define what makes a native plant a native plant. What's the definition?
The technical answer is a plant that was found in a particular region prior to Columbus coming to this continent. That's probably the broadest term of that. But even with that, the Native Americans would actually move plants around in commerce. You know, if a plant had a particular need or if it was medicinal, they would trade it. So trying to track some of that down historically can always be a challenge. So when you look at the plants themselves, you know, basically have they always been here without human intervention? But humans have their hands in everything, and a lot of this gets moved around. So if you go out to one of our, a native area, woodland area, anywhere around the state, you'll find native plants, which have always been there, along with a lot of plants that were brought in. And honeysuckle is probably one of the biggest you'll find. Certainly pear trees have recently a plant that has certainly invaded. And these plants will come in and displace a lot of the plants that have been here historically. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, but that's pretty much.
So native plants kind of hard to pin down then. Is that what you're saying?
There's different schools of thought and what makes something native or localized or, you know, adapted to an area. And it can get sticky in some circles depending on who you're debating. But that's our definition.
And Christina, wildflowers. What makes a wildflower wild? What's the definition of those? Same kind of thing?
So I focus on native plants. So wildflowers wouldn't necessarily have to be native. So, like a Queen Anne's lace, they could be introduced plants to the area.
Mm-hmm. What are some other examples of native plants that we see in Ohio?
We have a fairly rich ecosystem here in Ohio, certainly before the settlement came in. A lot of plants that we have had actually have been extirpated, which means they're no longer found in their original area. And some of that was due to just the fact that we've came in Ohio being a great agricultural state. A lot of that habitat, particularly our prairies, which are already flat and treeless, were perfect for just plowing them under and going in with agricultural crops. So a lot of plants like royal catchfly, which is a tall scarlet red. I don't think there's a plant you can find that is any brighter fire engine red. It's actually endangered in the state of Ohio because where it was found has now become agriculture. And the only places that you do find it are just actually a couple historic cemeteries where they plowed around these areas and actually kept the native habitat in place. And some of these are less than an acre in size. So what was a fairly extensive range is now reduced to, a handful of acreage.
Christine, what are some other examples of native plants that we have in Ohio?
We have several. Right now, you'll see the goldenrod's blooming, and the ragweed is native.
Unfortunately.
Right. We'll have the asters. They're starting to bloom, so fall wildflowers. These are native to our area and very common.
And some of the native plants that we're going to feature in the exhibit, one is the showy orchid. Orchids, a lot of people don't think of that as native plants Ohio. But in fact, Ohio has more native orchid plants than the state of Hawaii does.
What is it, 50 species, I think, of native orchids in Ohio?
About that in Ohio, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. How are these plants beneficial to the ecosystem?
They're hugely important. You don't realize it, but especially native plants, the insects and birds, the animals need those native plants to be successful. So you don't think about it, but the introduced plants don't support the birds that are here. So they, you know, they need the food source from the native plants.
And one of the plant insects and plants that we hear a lot about is the monarch butterfly, mm-hmm. how the monarch butterfly is in danger. And in fact, their most important source of food is the swamp milkweed, also featured in the exhibit. And not only because that's what the monarch butterfly eats, but there is a chemical in the milkweed that makes it sometimes toxic, but definitely objectionable to birds. So the birds don't eat the monarch butterfly. So if you have a reduced monarch butterfly population, one of the things you absolutely need to do is have those native plants, the swamp milkweed, intact.
Patricia, why is this particular exhibit a good fit for the Lloyd Library and Museum?
Well, we are a plant-based library, and we have records and illustrations and botanicals, well, going back to the 1400s, but for this particular exhibit, we go back to the 1700s. So even though we're using the term native plants today in this conversation, there were Europeans that were coming to America to study what we refer to as native plants in the 1700s, do illustrations. And we have their books and we have their works. So what we're going to be able to do is we're going to place side by side works from the 18th, 19th, and 20th century with what's happening today. Brian's photographs, archival material from the Wildlife Society. And even one of our manuscript collection has close to 6,000 slides from a naturalist, a member of the Wildflower Society, that took photographs anywhere from the 40s to the 60s and 70s. And as we all know, the world and life has changed a lot since then. So that's really fascinating to place side by side some of her views with some of the things that Brian will be showcasing.
Brian, how many of your photographs are part of the exhibit?
I'm not sure what made the final cut, but there's a few.
Yeah. How many did you take to begin with?
My overall collection,
yeah,
it's probably approaching a million.
A million photographs? How do you take a good picture of a wildflower or a native plant?
Well, the problem with photographing natives is twofold. One is just the camera technology, you know, getting the cameras and the exposures and depth of field and all that fun stuff. So you have to have, you know, the command of the camera. But the second, the hardest part about that is finding the plants. You know, you can't rely on serendipity saying, I'm going to go out and walk through the woods and, you know, come across an orchid
and
photograph
it. Plant.
every year what I do is I actually develop I call it my hot list. And there's always plants that when I find them, it's, you know, it's like fishing. Well, you should have been here last week, or it's in bud and I should be here next week. So what I do is I go, these are plants I must see in the wild. And I'll make that list and I'll really research those. And then you have to watch the weather, you know, plus or minus a week either way, because certainly here in Ohio, you know, certainly the weather right now is, a testament to that where, suddenly it's cool, very, very cool. And it's going to slow the plants down. Or if it was hot, it would accelerate. So in April or whenever the plant would bloom, I would look at that. And if it's accelerating, I would go earlier, and if it's cooler, I would go a touch later. But going out and researching it, what's the habitat I must find? And then going out and finding these plants. And I've got a lot of the commoner stuff. So a lot of the stuff I'm looking for now might only occur in very specific type of soils. Is research that, find it, and then put all the advantages in my corner so that when I do find the plant, it's going to be in peak, pristine shape, and then I'm able to get the image. And when I do find an image like that, I might take 200, 300, 400 images of that plant from every possible aperture, shutter speed. I wait for a cloud to come over and shoot it under different conditions.
That's why you have a million pictures.
you shoot a lot of in-camera reps, but you take 500, you delete everything except your best five. Because when you don't want to get back home and say, oh, I wish I would have taken it this way. You want to exhaust everything because if it took you 20 years to find the plant, it might be another 20 years before you see it again. So I want to make sure that when I capture it, I capture from every possible angle. And you have to be very delicate because when you find the plant, you have to look around and make sure there's no seedlings.
Sure, some of these are endangered species.
Yeah, right. And so you want to make sure that there's no, you're not destroying the habitat or you don't want to go in and pull the plants out of the way to get the shot and realize that there was that was providing, shade to the plant that might impact the plant in the future.
And that's where the Wildflower Society comes in. We have experts that know where different native plants are. So when I moved to the area, I had no idea. And I met up with the Wildflower Society, and we're a mix of all different kinds of people, amateurs to professionals. But as Brian talked about, these plants are in specific habitats. So you don't just find an orchid anywhere or even trillium, just, common wildflowers. You have to know where they are. And the state of Ohio has several unique ecosystems. So when you start learning about it, it's very interesting. And we go all over the state just in search of specific plants.
So there's a difference in the habitats if you go north, south, east, west?
Right. Well, think about, you've got your lake regions, you've got, we go to Adams County, which is the second highest diverse population of native plant species. Lucas County up at the Oak Openings in Toledo is the first in the state. And it's because you have these, it's based on where the glaciers were. They're just very unique ecoregions.
When did the Preservation Society get its start?
So we were founded in 1917 we're 100 years
That's
old.
That's okay.
Yeah. It's a great society. I love the society. It's a great group of people. So we were founded in 1917 by E. Lucy Brown, and we're made up of several different people, as I talked about, amateurs to professionals. We have field trips and lectures scheduled throughout the year. We're a very active and strong society.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Cincinnati Wildflower Preservation Society President Christine Hadley, Lloyd Library and Museum Executive Director Patricia Van Skake, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Horticulture Brian Jorg. We're talking about a new exhibit at the Lloyd Library and Museum, Wild About Wildflowers. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Patricia, tell us a little bit more about the exhibit. When's it actually get started?
Well, it gets started this Saturday. It's the opening reception, and we want to invite people there. It's from 1 to 3 p.m. We'll have our curators from the Lloyd Library. Brian is a co-curator of the exhibit. He'll be there. And then, as we just mentioned, the Wildflower Society is celebrating their 100th anniversary. They've been really a key partner in this whole process. They've given us a lot of advice. They're supporting some of the programs. So we'll be celebrating their 100th anniversary, and they'll be there. So it's an opportunity to mix with a lot of different specialists and knowledgeable in a variety of ways.
Now, you've actually got some live specimens that are part of this exhibit. What are some of those?
Do you want to speak to that, Brian?
The co-curator of this.
We're looking at what would probably be one of the more interesting type of plants at this time of the year. And we actually brought in a Sarracenia, which is a pitcher plant. And a pitcher plant is carnivorous, and it's actually found here in Ohio. And then this plant
So Ohio has its own species of carnivorous plant.
Yes.
That's something I never knew.
It goes to the coast, and it actually will drift up into Ontario and that part. So it's actually quite hardy. And it's just interesting. So even with small children, there's just something about a carnivorous plant that just does not seem – or it seems very interesting to them. So
you don't see those just everywhere. Again, very unique habitat.
Yeah, it's very, very – yeah, when you find those, you know you're in a special place. So so we have a few of those. And we have along with pictures and I believe an illustration from that plant when it was originally found. And it's – It's one of my favorite plants. I love going into particularly wetland areas. We do a lot of wetland restorations. And actually, Ohio has lost a larger percentage of wetlands than any state in the union. We've lost 90% of our wetlands. So, you know, you only, you know, look at it from a perspective of it's also plant habitat, but also for migration of waterfowl. You know, there's so many things that rely on that, you know, the cleaning of water and aquifers, and it all ties together. So, you know, it's a puzzle where all the pieces fit together nicely.
Now, something else I didn't know. There's actually a species of cactus native to Ohio, isn't there? Is that part of the exhibit?
Yes, it is part of the exhibit.
Okay.
And one of the things that's very interesting, not just about the cactus, but the whole exhibit, is we don't just show a plant and say, here's what it is. We sort of tell its story, its history, some fascinating information about it. So we bring that. But the cactus that we're going to be showcasing, we have, again, illustrations from the 1700s and 1800s. But it is it's the only cactus in Ohio, and it's one of them that is conducive to a climate that's as cold as ours.
Where do you find the cactus in Ohio? Is there a particular place, Brian?
Yeah, there's a well-known place down off of 52 down in, I think it's Brown County.
They're at the cemetery in Adams County.
Yeah.
Sandy Springs.
Yeah. So when you find these little sand veins, you go there and the plant life just absolutely changes. And we were talking about ecosystems a little bit earlier. You know, in Cincinnati, we sit on the Cincinnati Arch, just a massive formation of Ordovician limestone. But if you jump on 32 and head east, as soon as you start heading there, you'll see the trees along the fence row start changing, particularly this type of year when the black gums start turning, you know, brilliant fire engine red, and you realize the pH has dropped significantly. And when that happens, now you have an entirely new palette of plants that can survive there but couldn't necessarily survive back here in this county. So as you move around, the types of soil, so there's glaciated, unglaciated, high pH, low pH, all of that figures as to what will live in that particular type of ecosystem.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk to Rich first. Hi, Rich.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So I'm Rich Kogan with Ohio River Foundation, and we recently helped form a cooperative invasive species management area for this region, and I was wondering if the speakers could comment about the struggles and competition native plants and wildflowers have with such species as honeysuckle and purple loosestrife and others, and what maybe suburban residents could do on their properties to help with the problem.
Certainly. So we deal, unfortunately, with invasive plants. We do a lot of work to remove bush honeysuckle. I actually wanted to talk about, if anybody wants to come out and help us volunteer, we do some big give-back days. And you can find this information on our website at cincywildflower.org. But we will have two days. One will be, let me get these dates, October the 29th will be at Caesar Creek, removing bush honeysuckle there. And also November the 4th, we'll be doing a honeysuckle blitz at Indian Mound Reserve up near Cedarville, and that's with Green County Parks. But to the caller's point, we deal with these invasive plants, and we love the wildflowers and just the whole native habitat, and we want to protect that the best we can. So we go into areas that we feel we have a lot of good, diverse native plant habitat there, and we remove the invasives. I mean, there are other areas. We'd love to get rid of all the invasives, but we don't have the people power to do that. So,
yeah, we actually manage a large property for the zoo in Warren County. And our biggest challenge is certainly pear, Canada thistle, which despite its name is not native to Canada, let alone this continent, honeysuckle. And what happens is honeysuckle actually form a monoculture. And there's, you know, it does it have an allelopathic reaction, which means it basically can make sure nothing can grow underneath it. And usually when you find these huge stands of honeysuckle, it's devoid of anything underneath it. It'll actually displace anything from growing underneath it. So you can lose thousands of acres just with honeysuckle. Pear is certainly a problem that's relatively new to the game, but it has taken off. And actually for us, it's probably our premier challenge for us. We installed a wetland. We also installed a prairie. And just in those 3 years, pear has taken over. And we have thousands of pear trees currently in our prairie. And the only way to get through it is to go through with manpower physically and remove all of these. And it's just such a time-consuming job that to reclaim these back from invasive plants, it takes hundreds, if not thousands, of hours to go out and do this. And in today's world, it's hard to get that kind of labor.
Michael joins us now. Hi, Michael.
Yeah. I was curious as to whether the wildflower organization has a rescue unit to go in when areas are endangered by development. That could be anything from Spring Grove Cemetery to a strip mall. And there are, I've seen it. I've seen, you know, huge stands of native wildflowers just scraped right off the
right
surface. And we'll,
unfortunately, that happens. We love to promote wildflower rescues. And if there are people out there that are aware of areas that they would allow people to go in, and, you know, the developers or whoever's doing that would be cooperative with us, we would love to be able to go rescue those wildflowers.
Richard joins us. Hi, Richard.
Hi, yes. This is Dick Munson calling from Oxford, Ohio. And I actually operate a small native plant nursery that's just south the Oxford Farmers Market. But I did want to point out there are at least three species of lobelia which are in bloom now, the great blue, the red one.
Cardinal flower.
And the Indian tobacco, lobelia and slata, which are in bloom right now. And I actually sell or try to sell our native cactus, Opuntia humifusa. Everybody says, it can't be native in Ohio, and I have to keep trying to make that point. But I also grow and also try to sell Manfreda, which is American agave, and it's native, I think, only in Adams County, but years and years ago I got some seed from someone. And trying to make the case for our native plants is really a big educational kind of a thing that we have to go through. The other thing I wanted to point out is that I'm actually growing two native species of magnolia, the big leaf magnolia and also the umbrella magnolia, which are native in southeast Ohio. And again, when people see that big leaf magnolia, they just can't believe it's native here in Ohio. But we have a big educational program, ahead of us to try to educate people on what is native and why it's important. I'm very glad that the Lloyd Library, which is just a fabulous place, is putting on this exhibit. And I, of course, I know Brian, I've seen lots of his photographs, and really it's going to be a wonderful thing. So I encourage everyone to get out and to visit the Lloyd Library, and also to get out and explore the wild and appreciate the native plants we have. And I also happen to serve on the assessment team of the Ohio Invasive Plant Council, so I know exactly what Brian's talking about when he's talking about the calorie care.
Hey, Richard, thank you so much for the phone call. We really appreciate it very much. Thank you. Let's talk to Henry real quickly here. Hi, Henry. Henry, are you there?
I think you mishear me.
Okay, go ahead, though. What's your question?
Sorry. About invasive species, a few years ago I became interested in vermiculture, and I was very surprised to learn that earthworms are not native to the northeastern part of North America. And I was very curious to know what impacts the introduction of earthworms may have had on our native species. Do you have any information about that sort of thing? Has it impacted the balance of plants in our forests and things like that?
I don't have a lot of information. I know that there are people that are researching that, and I know that they are detrimental to our forest.
I don't know anything regionally. I do know, I think, that Minnesota would probably have the best data on that. They have a little different situation, but the worms out there are actually digesting the forest litter faster than it actually generates. And they have, I think Minnesota would probably be a great place where they would probably have more data than much I've seen around here.
Is it fair to say, Brian, the thing that's going to have the most impact is going to be invasive plants versus native plants?
Well, the challenge is these days there's so many attacks. I mean, you know, we're focusing on invasives, but, you know, there's so many things that are changing. Because I work with a lot of very rare plants, and by rare is one of those words that's thrown around quite a bit. But when we're, some of the plants that we work with, certainly at our lab at the zoo that handles that, which is Crewe, we're working with plants that might only have one, two, or three populations in the entire world. So when you look at those, each one is kind of specific as to what's causing it to be so rare. Is it habitat loss? Is it change in environment? Is it, you know, there's so many things. Even deer, you know, in 1906, there's not a deer in the state of Ohio. It was listed as extirpated. Hard to believe today. But in the 1930s, they started migrating in from Michigan, Pennsylvania. In 1964, there were 17,000. And today, I think the last numbers I had seen a number of years ago were over 700,000 deer in the state of Ohio. So here's an animal that, you know, it didn't really – you don't have high numbers when you hit that heavy forested state. But as we come in, chop it up, it's an animal of edges. So as we chop up these forests, if you're a wild turkey, it's not the best thing. But if you're a deer, that is absolute – you know, that's a – beautiful situation. So the deer population explodes. And if you get over 18 to 20 deer per square mile, they can impact massively. You know, species like Trillium, which, you know, we used to have massive displays of Trillium. But now deer can essentially, over a course of 2 or 3 years, effectively extirpate them from a particular area. So there's a lot of reasons why some of these things are becoming rare or even scarce.
So, Patricia, the exhibit starts on the 23rd, and how long is it going to run?
Oh, it starts September 9th.
Okay, September 9th.
This Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday. Okay.
Yes.
Why am I thinking? I'm way ahead. I'm way off here. Labor Day threw me off.
Yes.
How long is it going to run for?
It's going to run through November 18th.
Okay. Very good. What are the hours that people can see this?
Monday through Friday, 8 to 4. And then on Saturday, 9 to 4, the third Saturday of the month. But I do want to point out that we have a whole series of programs. So if they go to our website, they can see the complete listing for that, or our Facebook page. And so there are lots of events. There's 6 to 10 events that will be happening during this time period. And so there will be additional opportunities to view the exhibit as well.
Okay. We have links to those at WVXU.org right. as well. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Great, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Cincinnati Wildflower Preservation Society President Christine Hadley, Lloyd Library Museum Executive Director Patricia Van Skake, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Horticulture Brian York. Coming up, Thane Maynard talks with a scientist who studies why humans do the things we do. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.